Started. My name is Todd Nielsen. I'm a founding member, been coming to these community sessions for over 30 years. This is the first time that I know that we really have a focused session on such a critical subject as medical insurance and evacuation insurance. And I think this will be the first of other sessions in future ETC gatherings to address these important subjects. So this really is a very different session than a lot of things which might be about reading lists or reunions. This is the hard-nosed session on what happens, who responds when something really goes wrong. This is not going to address at this time cancellation insurance policies, which of course are very important and are the vast majority of the problems which our insurance providers give us. So I have directed over 12 nonprofit travel programs. One of them was the Explorers Club travel program. And we did the first ever programs taking paying passengers to see the Titanic, the Bismarck, and underwater sea vents. These are at unbelievable lengths, which I believe not even Global Rescue could come to the emergency evacuation. Only the U.S. or Russian navies, possibly the Chinese navies, could actually help a client who's over 12,000 feet below the Atlantic Ocean in a little three-person submersible. You can imagine the insurance policies and, above all, the release of liability statements were very severe. But that is a very extreme event and is very rarely duplicated. So that's sort of my reason of being very concerned. I must say, the title of this program is sort of apt. Do you really understand insurance coverage? I think it's similar to what a famous physicist said about quantum mechanics. If you think you do, then you really don't. Now, we have two distinguished speakers who run two of the largest, most celebrated nonprofit travel programs in the United States. And in fact, Brett Thompson's organization, Stanford Alumni, just won the Educational Excellence Award yesterday. I have a personal relationship to Stanford, and I'm supposed to personalize this, just so you know. That his mentor, to a large degree, was also my mentor, the legendary Peter Vohl. God bless his soul. Brett, he spent 9 years at Stanford Travel Program, ending that tenure in 94. And in the last three, he was deputy director of finance for Stanford Alumni. Just so you know, Stanford Alumni is a very sophisticated nonprofit travel program. They do their own contracts all over the world. They charter ships, et cetera. And of course, they take out their own insurance policies, which is one of the reasons Brett is here. Our other distinguished speaker is with the fabulous Sierra Club, which runs unbelievable numbers of fabulous outings with volunteers, with sophisticated leaders. They do all sorts of cleanup projects, hiking programs, et cetera. He is the program safety manager of the Sierra Club, which is a very, very significant responsibility given people hiking programs, which is a lot different than taking on a lot of our study tours, which are really very casual walking trips on fairly tame terrain. He was also involved with the School for Field Studies. My son was just in Nicaragua and Costa Rica this past semester with the School for Field Studies, which did a terrific job. His organization also does purchase evacuation and travel insurance, and they're here to give us their insights and take through case studies. So this really isn't a lecture. This is to give you some ideas of what they think are the key issues. We then have four respondents who I'll introduce in due course. So please, let's give a round of applause to Brett Thompson, Director, Travel Studies, Stanford Alumni Association. But first, turn off your cell phones. Forgot all the housekeeping. The session format will be open to questions and answers. We will be speaking into microphones. Therefore, that's why I've been asking everyone to sort of congregate to make it easier on Jim, our monitor, to pass a microphone around so that we don't have to waste time repeating every question, which we'll do. And I'm timekeeping to keep, hopefully, everything moving fairly well. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. Ooh, that's loud. You don't mind if I stand, do you? I think better that way. So I don't know about any of you, but I find insurance to be generally kind of boring. But it's an important thing. So I thought I would share with you a story, a case study, a story from a trip. And when I was thinking about that, there were two that immediately leapt to mind. One is very recent. It was about a woman who had a psychotic break in Hanoi and locked herself in her room. We had to cut the chain off the door. And she accused my staff of trying to poison and kidnap her. That's a great story, but it's actually not really relevant to trip evacuation insurance because she refused to be evacuated. But anyway, the story I do want to tell is about a trip that we did to Japan last April. So picture it. The ship is docked. People are getting ready to go off on their excursion, and one guy is missing, and they start looking around the ship room. They can't find him. They find him eventually up in the lounge, on the ground, head bleeding. He was all by himself. So the staff looked at him. They couldn't rouse him. He was completely unconscious, and he was bleeding, so they called the paramedics. Paramedics came. They evacuated him off. It turned out that he'd had a stroke and had fallen, hit his head. He had a subdural hematoma and a spinal injury. He ended up being taken to a hospital. You know, my staff immediately activated the emergency evacuation coverage that we purchased for all of our travelers. They took him to that one hospital. They did all kinds of x-rays, that sort of thing. He became paralyzed. He needed to be transported to another hospital by helicopter, I think. Throughout, you know, my staff was there. The ship was leaving, so we had our local operators and local staff helping out. The family was there. They needed translation services because they weren't communicating well with the Japanese. My staff from the office got involved, and we communicated with the family the whole time. We managed to get this translator there that they trusted. We flew one of the family members over to Japan. Eventually, after a couple months, this gentleman stabilized, and they were able to fly him home. At which point he was completely immobilized, neck down, and he eventually passed away. So I'm telling you the story because this is actually a story where the evacuation insurance that we had purchased worked perfectly. It covered most of the expenses. But what didn't happen were some of these other things. And there were some gaps that we noticed. One of the gaps was, who's going to pay for this translator? That's not the sort of thing that is written into insurance contracts. And also, who's going to fly the family member out? And who's going to be keeping track of everything and sort of smoothing the waters and trying to help this passenger and their family through this very difficult situation? So that all came to us, you know, and to be honest with you, we were happy to do it. You know, this is part of how we take care of our travelers. We have a relationship with them. We want them to be well. We want to take care of them when they're not. One of the things that we do in our office is we try to think ahead, and we think, what would we do if this happened? What would we do if that happened? And we get enough examples so that we have some history, you know, what happens when somebody gets injured and, you know, the family needs to be involved and needs to be transported there. What will happen if one of our staff has an accident? What will happen if one of our faculty has a heart attack? Unfortunately for the gentleman, I mean, the story wasn't great for him, but for us, it was a good example of how we can help people in their direst times of need. And so my point, in telling you the story, is to make three very specific suggestions. One, I think absolutely every traveler should have evacuation insurance without exception. Two, I think the institution should provide it. Three, I think the institution should take the lead in the relationship with the traveler when they're going through the difficult period. You know, not only is this, you know, part of the relationship you have with your travelers, but it's also a great liability and risk mitigation strategy. You know, you want to be there for them. You want to be part of the solution. You want to be interfacing with them. And for us, this took months. I mean, we were communicating with this family for probably 4 months. You know, so those are my three suggestions, very specific. And I think that's the last suggestion I would say is that when something like this happens, you need to be prepared to spend some money. You know, and so in our office, we have some reasonably deep pockets, but we also think about an emergency fund. We need to set some money aside because we know that something's going to happen. You know, we have older travelers, people have accidents or get sick all over the place, and it really is helpful to know that when we need to cover something, we have the funds available right then. So that would be my suggestions.
That's great. Many of you might have been in sessions where Rodney Gould, a lawyer from Boston, discussed the famous Hotchkiss case. And one of the conclusions from that, which is completely clear, is totally reinforcing what Brett has said, that the relationship with the family who has their family member is injured or deceased, the organization, not just the tour operator, not just the the insurance company, you should personally be relating to this person and doing the great bedside manner, because Hotchkiss botched it. And they had damages of, I think, were awarded against them of $40 million because it was a court case where it was viewed that they were completely indifferent and didn't really get involved for several months with a student who had a rare bug bite while descending from the Great Wall of China and in effect became greatly incapacitated for the rest of her life. So your bedside manner, how you come, you can't really solve the situation necessarily, but you're showing concern, I think, is one of Brett's key points. So now we'll introduce again the Todd Duncan, who's program safety manager of the Sierra Club.
Hi, thanks. So I think to give context to my experience and how I'll lend some insight into the discussion, you know, at Sierra Club, we're big enough, and we have a few staff that are dedicated risk management personnel, and so we have a fair amount of internal capacity to manage incidents, to create a risk management system, and to respond in kind to needs, big, medium, and small, as they come to the institution through all of our programs, and we do a wide range of stuff around the world, and because of that. There are components of our work that we do a lot in-house, and that's just sort of our model and our sort of scope and capacity. So we have the ability in some places to manage some things on our own. Certain parts of Africa, Bhutan, Indonesia, some parts of China, that sort of thing, where we have the capacity to make personal relationships with, you know, evacuation services and providers directly in ways that we feel at times for certain remote locations can better offer our participants the best possible evacuation and medical services and that sort of thing. So we don't always need travel insurance to some degree for all scopes of our, for all the types of incidents we see, but when we need it, we really need it. And it's a really important tool in our toolbox for managing risk and providing services for participants. If you're like me, you never had any background insurance, and now it's a big part of my life, right? And raise your hand if you like that. Exactly. Okay, so I actually sort of, Brett was saying that it's sort of boring, and he's right. I actually sort of think it's sort of interesting in a way, but it's way complex, and it's at my own sort of you know, as a glutton for punishment, it's sort of interesting. But the more you get into it, and the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know, et cetera, et cetera. And it's tough. It's complex, but it's a really valuable resource. I think, as Brett said again, it's an essential resource that is part of creating a quality program and delivering a quality product and caring for our participants in the way that we're not only obligated to, but that that they're deserving of. So my piece on this was not a case study exactly, but a few components of a number of case studies, as a lot of my role is managing the incidents as they come through, and then adding on and handling some of the insurance as it's appropriate. And so I have a few things that come up for me that are pretty typical that I think that are good to point out and that may be grist for the mill for discussion as we continue a little bit. A couple of those things are some of the most fundamental concepts are laying out really good expectations, right? So our leaders have a lot of responsibility and authority on the trips to devise and propose and manage and lead the trips as they go. And one of those roles is making sure they set the really good expectations on the limits of the policies of the insurance that we carry for the participants, trying to tell them as specifically as possible what this covers and what this does not. It sounds extremely simple, but it's way important, and it doesn't happen enough, and it's something that we're constantly training our leaders to do. Likewise, we're trying to front-load our participants with that information as much as possible, right? And that's exactly what this insurance is and exactly what this insurance is not and what they can expect. After the fact, we have all these problems, and it's tough to sort them out. If we can set our expectations cleanly and define them as well as possible up front, the better off everybody is. And then they're making quality, easier choices for themselves for figuring out which trips they want to participate in, and then we can serve them a little bit better as well. Part of that is multiple coverages. That's something that's sometimes an added complication. So the coverage that we provide for all our participants ritually, and then whatever extra coverage that they want. So a lot of times that's great, and an incident happens, and they're doubled up, and it can be a really easy process. Sometimes it's a bit of a battle through reimbursement, as some of those policies are battling for who is not primary, et cetera. So it's something to keep in mind as we're, again, setting those expectations up so that we can apply the cleanest, most reasonable services to their needs at that time that's particular and appropriate to that incident in that case. So just trying to get a really good understanding of that as we are vetting each participant and admitting them to our programs. Certain logistics like just the clear needs of the policy, paperwork that are needed, you know, fit to fly documents from physicians, that sort of stuff. Just getting, again, a good understanding of what those policies have, what those exclusions are, what those limits are, what the triggers are to trigger coverage, and then what those things might not exist, so that we understand going in, if I'm getting a call on the phone, that I have some idea I can start triggering the insurance process right away, or I'm not going to, or I have some feeling about that, and our leaders do as well in the field. So, and then educating our participants as much as possible beforehand and during, so that we can provide the best service and care throughout their experience if they're injured or ill. And then afterwards through assisting with that reimbursement process if possible. Other thing is doctors, oftentimes because the Sierra Club offers a lot of very remote backcountry trips, we're often in areas that it might be an incident that does not need an evacuation, but it's certainly but it needs medical attention, and we're not necessarily going to have a doctor. It's not necessarily going to be a full-on hospital. It might even be the funkiest clinic there is. And do these defining qualities of my policy, are they actually going to be relevant as triggers for the policy where I am? You know, what's going to qualify as that kind of thing? What is the healthcare provider in that country? And again, as we travel far afield and we're fairly remote, it's actually not the furthest remote. When we're way off the map, it's easier because extraction services are really our go-to, but it's that sort of third quarter place where we're close enough to have some services, but they may or may not trigger what's allowed for in policies and that sort of thing. So again, that's part of our planning for managing and building into our crisis response, our incident response, and how we're going to manage that risk and the care of our participants throughout that process. And then the other piece is time. It takes a while, and I think that it takes a while on the front end and the back end for that for implementing these things. And what I liked what Brett said was, I think, really relevant, is that there are plans in place. We want to be true to those plans, and we want to, you know, follow and abide by some of the limits and services. But ultimately, we're here to provide great experiences and care as, for our people as best as humanly possible. And so if we have to throw money at things, if we have to throw, if I have to jump on a plane and go places and it's totally overkill, it's all right. Either I'm buying myself, them, and my, in the Sierra Club karma, or at the very least, I'm doing absolutely whatever I can to make sure the situation goes well. And I was in another risk management session earlier, and one of the legal counsels there made a good point, which is, she said, so many cases could be avoided, legal cases could be avoided if the response had been handled differently, right? And you mentioned this with the Hotchkiss piece to some degree, Todd. And so, and I agree with that, and it's my experience as well. And insurance factors into that. Again, it's one of these really important, essential tools into providing the type of care that we all want to do. It's, it has complex layers, right? But it, but it's certainly something, as I learn and get more savvy at navigating that, that that it becomes as useful as it can be. Thanks.
I'll add a couple of thoughts, which really, prior to the insurance coverage, is the medical release forms. It's not so much release, but people acknowledging that they have various medical problems so that we can decline their participation at the beginning. So we have this medical, but the mental disabilities is increasing. And we had a passenger on a tour of prehistoric caves in France who clearly was somewhat disorientated, like I think Brett was mentioning, and we wish we had caught this prior. And one of the things which also, in terms of putting money behind it, is we have to be prepared to send the participant home and not worry about the expense of that, whether it's done by the travel planner and or with the tour operator, so that we minimize these problems before they get worse and we don't ruin the experience for the rest of the groups. Now, we are going to first start off with Susan Weiss, who is the Director, Sales, Client Relations, Educational Travel for USI Travel Insurance Services.
Hello.
You can stand up if you want, whatever you want.
Okay. I'll stand up. One thing I have to add, just in the experience that I've had doing this for many, many years, there have been some changes over the last several years when it comes to emergency medical evacuations. But my biggest piece of advice is, if you have an emergency medical program from any one of the providers available to you, that the traveler and the group leaders know that the travelers have this insurance coverage, they know the appropriate phone numbers to call, and as soon as reasonably possible, when there is a medical situation, whether it's an illness or an injury, that you contact, or the group leader or the traveler needs to contact the emergency assistance company as soon as possible. This is in the best interest of the traveler, because immediately it kicks into action the medical assistance program, whether they just need local medical attention or they need to be evacuated to close by hospital to get stabilized to eventually return home. There are physicians on staff for the emergency medical companies, and they work directly with the physicians in the field, and they're also available 24/7. So that's my most important piece of advice when you have travelers with the medical evacuation program, is to involve the assistance company as soon as possible, and I think that's the same with any assistance provider across the board.
Thank you, Susan. I wanted to mention, too, there's no specific sponsors here, but USI is a Partner Boulevard sponsor, and you can see her on the Partner Boulevard, as is our next distinguished speaker, Christopher Palmieri, who's Associate Director of Global Rescue, which is also a sponsoring partner, and you can see them as well on the Partner Boulevard. So, and I must say that Christopher's partner, who's director of, I think, security, he just gave an excellent talk on evacuating well, semi-evacuate, at least the plan to evacuate someone out of a remote jungle in Nicaragua. So Christopher, please share your insights with us.
So, well, that's loud. I might not need this microphone. So my company's not an insurance company. We're a travel risk and crisis management company. And I'm not really here so much to talk about, you know, my company as it is to inform you as to the questions that you should be asking before you get into an agreement with some company that does either travel insurance or travel risk and crisis management. There's some important things that you should ask that I think often get overlooked. And everybody thinks that everything is just all included in a program, and quite often it's not. So you should really know, you know, who you're dealing with. And more importantly, when you're dealing with emergency medical or security evacuation services, you want to find out if that company has the ability to do what's called field rescue. Can they go to the point of illness or injury and evac from that point? Or do you already have to be at a hospital? Or do you have to be on the tarmac? Okay, that's number one. Number two, do they have their own deployable in-house personnel as well as assets that they work with all over the world? Okay. Number three, are there any activities or residency restrictions? Because most often with insurance policies, there are. So this is an important piece because if somebody's doing an activity that's restricted or not allowed as part of an insurance policy, then that person would not, you know, have that coverage and would not be evac'd. So, and then the other thing is understand the triggers for evacuation. Nobody just gets evac'd because they've got a stomach ache. I can tell you that right now. Okay, there are always triggers, no matter who you deal with. So know what those triggers are. I think, you know, Susan just mentioned, let your travelers know that you have a partnership with a, whether it's an insurance company or travel risk and crisis management provider. So this way they know who to contact in the event of an emergency. Because honestly, you want them calling us. You don't want to be taking the call at 2 in the morning on Thanksgiving. You don't, because you're not the experts at, you know, if you have to put an evac plan together, that's not what you're paid to do. And that's why you partner with, you know, an insurance company or a travel risk and crisis management company to handle that stuff for you. Where are they going to be evac to? And this is all part of the pre-contract discussions that you have with a provider, is do you want evac back to home hospital and home country? Do you want evac to the nearest appropriate hospital with repatriation? And then what is your responsibility in terms of the contract? Okay, so, you know, I'll speak for how we operate, and I'm sure it's very similar to the rest of the folks on the panel, that you have to provide the list of the travelers that you want to provide coverage for. So their name, date of birth, and the dates that they're traveling have to be on the list that come into my company. Because what happens is we have two teams, a med ops team and a security ops team, and depending on the nature of the emergency, that determines who gets that phone call. Are they going to have the ability to talk to a critical care paramedic in real time on the first call? A lot of times, companies staff with call centers. Okay, so again, everybody's different and everybody does something different. So, you know what it is, what your responsibility is, and know what you're getting in terms of services from the provider that you contract with.
Thank you, Christopher. It's a little lag time here. Thank you, Christopher. If you'd pass the microphone over to Kevin, our next respondee, Kevin Harrelly, who's the National Accounts Manager for Travel Insured International.
Hi, everybody. I agree with everything that's been said on the panel so far. The biggest thing is get us involved as soon as possible. But we also want you to get the situation handled where you are and get things rolling and then get us involved. You don't want a lag time of trying to get a hold of us while there's persons need of medical assistance. So move that along and get us involved as quickly as possible. Reason being is you want U.S. doctors communicating with doctors over there to find out when they need, where they need to go, what's the next step, when they can come home. We've had situations where, you know, our assistance company wants them to stay longer because they don't feel they're ready to go home yet. And then we've had, and meanwhile, they're trying to, the other hospital's trying to push them out the door. And we want to make sure they're stabilized. And, you know, we've had situations where that hospital wants to keep them as well. And we know it's safe for them to go home. So I think the biggest thing is make sure you get the situation handled like Todd said, on site, and then get us involved as quickly as possible so you can get that communication going.
Thank you, Kevin. The next respondent is actually a travel planner, too, and she is the Vice President of Travel, the World Affairs Council of Philadelphia, and she has some case studies she's going to outline as well.
I'll just focus on one. So the case that I'm going to focus on happened a few years ago, and it occurred during a bombing of a cafe in Marrakesh. A woman who was about to travel to Morocco felt too frightened to go, so she canceled. But because the bombing had not been claimed by a terrorist organization, the insurance company turned down her claim. I think there's a couple of things to look at here. You know, the case was all over the press. There were commentators, there was speculation that it was Al-Qaeda in North Africa, but nobody at that point had come forward and claimed responsibility. The U.S. State Department, when they give out information, which they hadn't in this case, of either a travel advisory or travel warning, and some might say, well, you know, and we do, we'd share if we know at all if there's anything like that on a trip, then there might be a case for, you know, you shouldn't have gone. But there's sort of a couple of parts to this. So we've been sending travelers to Iran for 15 years or two decades, and they, the State Department, have had advisories, warnings. We've also done that for Libya, Israel, and Palestine. But what we do is, in our travel registration form, they have to check that they've read the State Department warning or advisory. The other thing I think to take note of is that the World Affairs Council, our mission is to educate our members about international affairs and foreign policy. So therefore, you know, we might be held to a higher account in terms of, well, you should have known, don't have trips there. So by having the travelers sign off that they've read this, they've been informed, you know, it's part of the way to saying, well, this was your choice. So I think that's, you know, I'd be interested to hear what you might say about that.
That's great. Thank you, Joan. Let me add very quickly, because in addition to insurance, what is so important is at least three steps. One is you must mention clear risks in your marketing materials. It's very important to do this. Any lawyer would tell you that. You should put clear risks in your terms and conditions. And you should have clear risks stated in your signed medical form. And you should get a signed release of all, such as checking off boxes that you're aware that Iran is on a warning list and basically has been since 1979, I believe. And we don't have an embassy still. It's the Swiss embassy we use. So do you have additional? You have additional comments? Christopher?
One of the things I think is important is when you're putting a program together, know what it is that you need, and this way you can communicate that with the potential provider. You know, do you need a program with medical evac and medical advisory services? Security advisory, security evac. Do you need intel services as part of the program? And then do you need emergency action planning for things like itinerary reviews? So do you need somebody from, say, a security team to do a review on your itinerary for a trip to Turkey? And, you know, this way what you'll be able to do is you'll get an analysis from a security expert on that particular itinerary, and maybe they'll make some tweaks to it. Maybe you should go to this part of the country instead of this part of the country. You might decide, hey, we don't want to do this trip at all. But there are different components to each program, and I think, you know, understand what it is that you need, and then work with a provider that can deliver to you what it is that you need as part of your program.
Now, we'll open this up, and we'll pass a microphone to anyone who has a question, anyone who has a comment. Melissa, excuse me, Catherine from the Commonwealth.
Christina from the Commonwealth Club of California. I was just looking to see if John and Rita Royal were here, because I have an anecdote of something that we're dealing with now. We just had a trip come back from Patagonia, and halfway through the trip, our study leader fell ill. He became very sick with pneumonia, and as they were in Ushuaia, they were told he should not continue. He's almost 80 years old, and they said this is life-threatening at this point, so he had to go home. They had purchased medical evacuation insurance for everybody, but the claim is being denied because he wasn't dying. I don't know. It's, you know, he was at risk. The doctor there said he should be sent home, and he wanted to go home too. He felt it was too risky. So now the responsibility is on them, either the institution or the organization or the tour operator who purchased this insurance on behalf of everybody. It's not their personal decision. I don't know if anyone's had that experience before, because you provided it to them. You're saying, we're giving you insurance that we think is going to be good enough to cover you, but it's not. I mean, I don't know if...
I really think what you have to look at on an evacuation policy is just to make sure it's, you know, primary or secondary, and if it covers pre-existing conditions. I don't know if this gentleman had a pre-existing, but if he did and it doesn't cover him, it could be a denial. I'm not sure why that claim was denied, but I have no idea. But I think the biggest thing too I wanted to bring up before we started the Q&A is with the Hotchkiss case, like you said, with a travel assistance company, you can actually call them and find information out about the destination requirements, maybe different shots that immunizations you might need and things along those lines too. So I think that's a piece of the puzzle that when you do purchase insurance on behalf of all your clients or travel protection is that they're getting this assistance company as well, so they can reach out prior and find out any kind of issues that they may have going to that destination. So it's a very important part.
Fine. I don't think we've really addressed your question. But that said, this is, I think, the first of many sessions which we'll have over the years. So, Christina, we should probably elaborate this more after this conference and then see if we can focus on details. The great variety of circumstances is unbelievable. I mean, here's a study leader. Scott Hume was just mentioning a case of evacuating a client. The client hasn't purchased insurance, but the person they're evacuating is a contractor, not an employee of the client. That's the sort of detail and the changes in detail. The other things, too, is many of us, such as Joan mentioned, are sending people to countries which really are considered dangerous overall. And yet it's part of the World Affairs Council. That's what they do, is they address some of the global problems in diplomatic circles. So obviously Iran is very important. So that's an excellent point, but I don't know. And it keeps occurring more and more, these exceptions, and how do we deal with them? Does anyone want to add to that?
Yeah, I don't know what company they worked with, but do you know what the triggers were for evacuation for that company that they had purchased the evac coverage from?
What do you mean with the triggers were?
He went to the doctor there in Ushuaia at the ship, and they sent him to a local doctor there, and they determined he did, in fact, have pneumonia. They were heading off to a more remote location and that he shouldn't continue. So that's all.
Yeah, I mean, I would just, you know, giving advice to, you know, whoever they purchased evac coverage from or whoever the company they were working with, you know, it typically will spell out in the contract what the triggers are for evacuation. You know, ours in particular, the traveler has to be 100 miles from home, and they have to have a condition that would require inpatient hospitalization, meaning they spend one night in the hospital. And as long as those triggers are met, then everything related to that evac would be coordinated and handled and paid for by my company. So I can only speak for, I don't know who they use, so I don't want to speak for them, but whoever they did use, there's probably some sort of triggers in place. I don't know what those triggers were for that particular company, but it sounds like the triggers weren't met, which is why he wasn't evac'd. So I would have them, I guess, review their contract that they have with whoever their provider is and see what the triggers are for evac and why that did get, you know, denied.
So for sure, it's on the operator and travel planner's responsibility to know. But because there are so many situations, that, you know, thousands of variations of something that could happen, at what point does our insurance company help us be better clients? Because in this case, how they kind of feel is, we weren't helped to make this claim go through. I mean, insurance companies, we all know it, sorry, but you know, they make money because they don't have to pay out on claims. I mean, it doesn't, that's how it works. So it would be really great to get that information from our travel insurance providers and really clear contact information, what to do in this scenario, what's the best way to handle this situation so that tour leaders, and they, you know, this is a very experienced tour company that's been in the business a long time, and if they didn't do something right in the process, then we're in trouble, right?
Yeah, here. I think this, the question I have to you was the assistance company involved in determination whether this person need to be evac'd or not. No names here, please, no names. Was the assistance company involved? Was a phone call made from the hospital to the assistance company to get them involved to get the evac rolling?
Yes. Okay. I do think part of the problem was how and when the return tickets were purchased, you know, because it wasn't a medical evacuation like, okay, we need to get this helicopter, this plane in here and get him out of here right away. It was about him changing tickets, buying a new ticket. His own personal travel agent was involved and she couldn't change his tickets. So there were a lot of people getting involved in buying these business class tickets home.
I can't speak for the company that was involved.
Let me add what Brett has said before. Everyone's got to be ready to shell out some money. And if it's a business class air ticket, consider yourself lucky, in my view, because that's change compared to the sort of problems which could really occur. But Brett's idea of being compassionate, he flew over a staff member, if I recall. He flew over a family member, which is very important. And we're talking quickly. Did you already know that your insurance policy would cover or deny those extra expenses? You seem to imply you did not know, but you went right ahead and did them. Okay, he says he was pretty sure they would not be covered. But that's what it is. Other questions? Please wait for the microphone. And thank you to Jim, our monitor here. Make sure it's on. Wait a second.
This is a question for Brett. It's about cost recovery. So does Stanford build into each traveler's cost the cost of your evacuation insurance?
Yes.
Okay.
The answer is yes.
Yeah. And on average, what is that per person? How much?
On average, I think it's $35 a person or something like that. 30? Less?
Are there other questions? Well, let's sort of recap some of our points then. From Brett, I think he had mentioned that one of the major things was, even though he had what everyone should have, which is an emergency response plan, there were areas that they didn't envision were covered. One of them was the translator, which could happen in most of the countries abroad. That he believes, and I concur, and I think many of us would, that evacuation insurance should be provided for every passenger, No question. This is not an option. It has to be built in. And whether it's paid by the organization or by the tour operator, it should be up front. They encourage, obviously, travel cancellation insurance. That's correct? Yes, they encourage that. And the third point, I think, which was very significant, is that the relationship by the sponsoring organization, not just the tour operator, is very important in these situations, that you show compassion and concern, and there's overtime work. And that's why your emergency response plan should immediately have a hierarchy in the organization and in the tour operator, where you quickly chat with and know who's responsible for what, and then to immediately contact your insurance provider. Todd Duncan of Sierra Club mentioned it's very important to clarify the limitations of coverage as best as possible to both your staff and to the passengers. And this somewhat is, again, goes back to, I think, explaining to people in marketing materials, as well as in terms and conditions, just the difficulties which the participant might encounter. One of the classics for us is one of the programs which we love and is always very popular is we go into prehistoric caves. Well, these are damp, slippery caves. There's often no railings. And if people have any problems with stability walking, this is a major liability. You often cannot bring canes, walking canes in, because they view this as a potential damage to this incredible prehistoric art on the walls. So to explain these clear limitations, I feel, Todd mentioned an excellent point that there are multiple coverages which you should have, and that there is overlapping coverages, and to expect a battle of basically who is the primary coverage carrier and who is secondary. The other point Todd made was assisting with recovering benefits. That's a major thing for, I think, the travel planner and, of course, the tour operator to do, that you should be actively involved with recovering benefits, even if it's an air ticket, even if it's someone who's canceled last minute. And often you have to try to do a make good because there isn't coverage. It was a pre-existing condition, for example, which was excluded. The other point by Todd Duncan was, it takes time, and you have to be patient in terms of resolving these issues. Susan of USI mentioned the importance of contacting the insurance provider as soon as possible. This means that the lecturer, the trip manager, the tour operator, everyone should be involved and know the number and have a cell phone, which is valid, operating overseas or domestically, whatever. This Scott Hume had mentioned in the previous how a satellite phone, cell phone, is so important in many areas if you're doing very remote programming such as the Sierra Club does. Christopher mentioned the importance of the questions you should ask beforehand. And this is some of the heavy lifting I think we really should understand. It is such a wonderful business. And we all want to talk about photography techniques and, the different bird species counts or whatever, the marketing initiative. This is the heavy lifting. This is one of my insurance policies, which is Dayglode, and it's arcane. And the questions which this session, because about 10 days ago they asked me to moderate this, I started, well, I better get my ducks in a row. I now have a lot of questions. So this is something you should do. You should be pulling out these policies. And I think Christopher's point of view too is there's a difference. Can the insurance company actually provide evacuation in circumstances which could be very remote or dire? I recall there was the instance after the January 2011 Egyptian Revolution, euphemistically called the Egyptian Spring, the Arab Spring, they evacuated a group on request by the client, which was a college in northern Vermont, et cetera. I, too, had clients hold up unfortunately, in the Mina House near the pyramids, and they were evacuated, but that was the U.S. government stepping in to do an orderly evacuation from Cairo Airport. Joan has mentioned the idea of having all of these risks in TNC, and if there are no more questions, I think we'll leave it so that you have 10 minutes to come up and ask personal questions of anyone here. Any more questions? Well, I want to then do some housekeeping here, which is one, to thank Brett Thompson of Stanford, Todd Duncan of Sierra Club, Christopher Palmieri of Global Rescue, Susan Weiss of USI Travel Services, Kevin Gerley, who I am missing my notes, is of Travel Insured International, and Joan Russell, World Affairs Council of Philadelphia. I'm Todd Nielsen of EOS Study Tours, spelled E-O-S, the Greek goddess of dawn. Thank you. The next session is connects at 3 o'clock upstairs in the International Bazaar. Have a wonderful afternoon and evening. Thank you. Please do fill out the evaluation.